All right, is that better? Yeah. So here's the thing. So why is this important? And let me just make the argument that it is vitally important. It is vitally important. It's not just something that, you know, can easily be passed over. And the reason is because as Christians, we should have the market on romantic love. Romantic love belongs to the Christian. The world's ripped it off. And the world has not only plagiarized it, but perverted it. It's made it something that it's not supposed to be. And as a result, people are so confused. People are hurt. People go through things they shouldn't have to go through. And so here, right in the Bible, what may seem like an unusual book, if you just read it on your own and you're like a new Christian and you're doing one of those things where you're like, let's see what the Lord wants me to read today. And you start reading that, you'll be pretty surprised. But the thing is, doesn't it make sense that God should have a say-so about this? Shouldn't there be a book in the Bible that gives us the whole plan of romantic love? Shouldn't we have instruction about something that is at least top three of the most important things that people will deal with in their life? The thing that has the potential to affect one's life exponentially. The whole area of romantic love is an area that has so much potential for blessing and good, but at the same time, if seen incorrectly and if Satan gets a foothold in those areas, which he has in society, then it has the opposite effect. And so here we are. If you turn in the book of Song of Solomon, last week I went through a pretty good, Song of Solomon, sorry, Song of Solomon, yeah. So I went through kind of it's also called Song of Songs. It's both, if you didn't know that. I went through a lengthy introduction last time, and I don't have time to sort of rehash that. I'll give you a little bit of that just to get some context of what's going on. And then we'll get into it. We're going to be in chapter 2 tonight, and we'll definitely make it through chapter 3. They go pretty quick, these two chapters. But what we're finding here, and if you came last week, you could have been either relieved or disappointed. Because it might not have been as steamy as you thought it was going to be. So you might have been relieved or disappointed. But whatever you were last week, don't worry. It's coming. But the reason it wasn't so steamy last week is because romantic love isn't supposed to start off steamy like the movies make it. Romantic love is not designed to be physical in the beginning. And last week we saw the whole like meeting and that initial euphoria, and we're hearing about the story and the how, you know, it's like we're seeing a couple, it's like they're being interviewed and they're remembering when they met and little things that happen through the process. But last week was just kind of that initial encounter of two people that are falling in love. And so it's a progression. I think that's important to understand when you're dealing with romantic love, that it's a progression. We're going to see that tonight. We're going to see more progression. But basically, the story is written as this couple is sort of sharing things from their own experience. But from this, we get the biblical precedent of what romantic love is, what it looks like, and in other words, how we're to go about it. And so we can look at this, and you know, if you go through the New Testament, you don't see like real clear instructions about dating and courting and how all that works. So guys write books about that. It just makes it, some of it just makes it so weird, you know. And then there's this whole courting movement, and really it just gets confusing for people. So we can go to the text and just kind of see what, how this works out and how we're to do this. So as we're looking at this, it's almost like this married couple is reflecting on the events of their romantic love. And so we're able to look at it sort of like a drama or a play. It's things unfolding. And as we look at that, the way it all happened was Solomon, who's the husband in the story, he owned the land, all the land around, and he would lease it out for people to work the land. And then he'd go check on the land, and he'd get rent from the land. And as he was doing that, he encountered a woman that is referred to as the what? Shulamite? Got it. The Shulamite woman. So that's where we sort of picked up, you know, this introduction and this meeting. So the Shulamite woman and Solomon, those are the two characters. And then there's the the daughters of Jerusalem. And that's kind of just like the general audience. So that's kind of like who they're talking to. And they sort of play a role in this. So generally, that's the players there. And it's important, and I'll do the best I can to try to delineate who's speaking. So that's where some of the confusion comes in, is who's speaking here and who's speaking there. So it goes back and forth. Also, as you're reading this, you may have in your Bible where it designates, separates. So, but there's variations in that too. So when I was studying, I was just trying to be clear about who was saying what. And so there can be a little bit of disagreement about that, but nothing that would really make a huge difference. So just some little variations of that, about that. And then the other thing you have to know is this book completely metaphorical about a picture of the church and Christ, the relationship between the church and Christ? Or is it literal and historical? Is it an actual thing that happened actually between Solomon and the Shulamite woman? Did it actually happen? So is it a historical, literal thing, or is it a metaphorical thing? So if you read and study, you'll find people are all over the place. And so I believe it's, number one, literal and historical. So it's I'm taking it from the viewpoint, it actually literally happened. It was an actual event. So that's the primary reason for the book. And I believe because God wants us to know and understand how this whole romantic love works, I think that's why it's in there. But as I pointed out last week, secondarily, it's also a picture of Christ's relationship with the church. And we saw in Ephesians last week, Ephesians 5, how the whole husband-wife relationship is a picture of Christ and the church. So that's secondary, I believe. And then the third thing, I'm going to start off with this as an introduction. So are you in the book of Song of Solomon? You guys there? Okay, really quick, turn to the book of Hebrews, chapter 13. I think this is a critical scripture for us as we get into the text tonight. Hebrews chapter 13. So I'm going to start in verse 1, just for context here. And I'm not, somebody said last week that I was went to Ephesians because I was trying to delay getting into, so I'm not doing that. I know it's there. We're going to get there. But this is important, okay, for context. So check this out. In verse 1 of chapter 13, it says, "Let brotherly love continue. Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have unwittingly entertained angels. Remember the prisoners as if chained with them, those who are mistreated, since you yourselves are in body also." So what's happening here? You may say, this has nothing to do with Song of Solomon, and you're right. But what's happening here? That's why I wanted to read that first part. This is important. The Bible has a lot to say about all the different types of relationships. We just read this, these different types of relationships. Here's how we're supposed to handle them. So the Bible talks about parents to children, children to parents. It talks about our brothers and sisters within the church body. It talks about employer-employee relationships and vice versa. And we can go on. So the Bible is very, very concerned about how we deal with our relationships, because our own relationship with Christ is played out in our relationships with other people. So we have the vertical, right? That's our relationship with God. And a lot of us, that's our best relationship, and it should be. But sometimes we want that to be our only relationship, because that's God's easy to deal with. I don't know how he deals with us, but he's easy to deal with. But our relationship with God has to play itself out in our relationships with other people. So that's why Jesus said all the commandments are summed up in this. What? Basically, love God and love people. That's the fulfillment of the whole law. So watch this in verse 4. This is what I really wanted to get to. He says, "Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge." So there it is. So here's God's prescription, right? So God's basically saying the marriage bed. He's talking about sexual relationships and their context. Within a marriage, he says that's honorable. And he says it's undefiled. What are you saying? So that's God's design, right? And so within the confines of marriage, physical relationships are honorable and undefiled. But he says when you get outside of that, that's where he means fornication. If you ever wonder what fornication means, fornication is any sexual relationship outside of a marriage. So he says that'll be judged. So in that one verse, you have these two extremes. And you can see what Satan wants to do and how he wants to defile the marriage bed. He wants to normalize unnormal sexual relationships. That's what he wants to do. So that's what he works on. So we have the Song of Solomon now, and it kind of lays the whole thing out for us. So turn back. So the physical love, it's a nice way to say that. Physical romantic love within marriage, it's like, you know, when it gets really, really cold here in the winter, like, I don't know, January. And you remember when a couple years ago everything got completely iced over? You couldn't go anywhere and you're stuck in your house. But man, if you had a fireplace and a log and you're sitting on your nice little chair and it's all hectic out there, and you have that nice fire sitting in there, it's an amazing thing. The fire is beautiful, comforting, relaxing. It's a blessing. But if that fire got on your drapes and then started burning down your whole house outside of the fireplace, then that would be pretty destructive. Well, Sexual relationships are like that. Within the context, that fire can burn hot and be a blessing and be great. And God made it that way. But you get that fire outside of the fireplace and you're going to burn a whole bunch of stuff down. So, let's get into it. So chapter 2, verse 1, we're actually going to have to bump up a little bit in verse 16 of chapter 1, because verse 1 kind of starts right in the middle of a sentence. So we're going to go in verse 16. This is the woman speaking. And she says, "Behold, you are handsome, my beloved, yes, pleasant." And I pointed out last week that that word refers to being a best friend. And she says, "Also, our bed is green, the beams of our houses are cedar, and our rafters of fir." She's basically saying, being with you is like paradise. So wonderful, so stable, so great. And before that, we kept seeing this interchange of compliments. And this Shulamite woman, as she was being complimented, genuine compliments by Solomon, you see her first get really insecure. She first had a hard time dealing with how much love Solomon was showing her and the things he thought about her. She couldn't believe it. And so she would sort of, she went into a little bit of a shell. Her insecurities were kind of brought to the surface, and she mentioned how her skin color was tanned by the sun because she worked outside, which now is good. Back in the day was not good. Better to be really white, because it was a class thing that if you're really white, pale type, you would be seen as upper class. And if you were tanned by the sun, it meant you worked outside all the time. So she got uncomfortable with this guy was showing all this love to her and was seeing her in a way, and she just, she liked it, but then she started thinking, oh my goodness, I'm not all that. I'm not everything he thinks. She started feeling insecure, but he started to continue to blossom her. So we got a picture of how important it is in romantic love for the man to take the lead with that, and to remember the sensitivities there of understanding that there might be insecurities, and yet being able to express for the man, being able to express what he is feeling, what he is seeing in her, what he's noticing about her. So as she's starting to get more confident, she's returning the favor. And it's amazing, guys, if you notice in verse 16, she says, "Behold, you are handsome, my beloved." It's amazing how handsome you get when you tell the person you're interested in how beautiful they are. You all of a sudden get very handsome to them. So if you want to keep looking pretty good in the eyes of your little lady, keep giving them a lot of compliments and you'll really be, you know, looking pretty good. So anyway, be that as it may. So now look at this. So in verse 1 of chapter 2, she continues that and she says, "I am the rose of Sharon and the lily of the valleys." So this is interesting because a lot of times that description is incorrectly applied to Jesus. And that's not a good description or application of a picture of Jesus. What this is she's saying that during the time of year here, that there are a whole bunch of these flowers around. They are common flowers. So there are a whole bunch of these flowers. So she's going from reflecting on her inadequacies and her physical insufficiencies to now she's coming out a little bit and she's saying, well, I'm like a flower, but I'm like all these other flowers. You know, I'm not terrible, but I'm not anything notable. So, watch what he says. In verse 2, he says, like a lily among thorns, so is my love among the daughters. So you see what he did there? He basically said, you, compared to all those flowers, they're like thorns compared to you. You know what he's doing? He's singling her out. He's giving her the gift of preference. He's basically saying that no one's like you. And he's giving her the security and the confidence of how he sees her. And he's letting her know that. And so how do you think that's going to go with her? Think that'll go pretty good? Yeah, it goes pretty good. So verse 3, she says, now this is the woman, she responds and she says, like an apple tree among trees of the woods, so is my beloved among the sons. So do you see what she's doing? She's responding to him. So he's sort of taking the lead in this, the romantic lead. And we see this is a proper arrangement. So when we understand these things, God is also understanding that he's designed us certain ways to do certain things and to have certain roles. And of course, that's being challenged now. But you can't get around that God has designed men and women differently, and now his program of romantic love is to work with the designs of men and women and to what will be best in the relationship. So now she's saying, you really stand out among the rest as well. And she says, I sat down in his shade with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. So what she's describing, remember, she's talking to people and explaining their whole relationship, and she's saying that there is something about this guy that was special, that stood out so much so through his, want to say, advancements or his encouragement or his affection and his ability to talk to her. And he's not like spitting game, as people like to say. He's not trying to, you know, use manipulation techniques. This is a guy who genuinely sees somebody he's genuinely taken by. And he's drawn to her. And so now the way that he's, getting her attention or getting her to feel comfortable is he's not jumping to third base right away. What he's doing is he's letting her know how he sees her. And he's done that so much so to the point where she is saying that, I feel comfortable. I'm secure resting under your shade. That being next to you is a place. Notice she feels secure. She feels protected. She feels special. She feels like out of all the relationships in the world that it's just her and him. And now she's there's things that are going on with her psychologically, emotionally, that is so important in a relationship, which a lot of guys don't understand this whole aspect of romantic love. So notice the interchange, and this is a process, right? So we have to be kind of concerned about how fast or how slow we go too. So that's an issue. We're seeing this. We're seeing development. We're seeing progression. We're seeing being comfortable with one another. And notice he says, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. So it's interesting because it's like, just his fruit, like whatever he was putting off, whatever his thing was, like just him to her was, he was a fruit tree that she wanted to eat from. He was something where it wasn't like all these other fruit trees would have done the trick. It was just his fruit. It was like the fruit had his name on it. And she wanted that fruit. She just wanted to now, she was at a place now where she's like, I just want to be next to you and experience who you are. And the word fruit, if you look it up, if you get down to the origins of fruit, the word fruit comes from a word that means enjoyment. So she's saying, I just enjoy being around you. You know, she's gotten to the place where it's like, it's not weird. They're kind of past that initial part where, you know, where it's like, oh man, I got to really impress this person and really show. Do you ever go out to eat and you look around and try to figure out who's on their first date? I do that. You can tell, sadly, you can tell people that have been married a long time. They're just eating and barely looking at each other and talking to each other. And then the ones, yeah, you've seen that. The ones on the first, I could be totally wrong. I just observe. But then the ones on the first date, man, they're full on into it, like fully engaged. They don't take their eyes off each other. They're laughing at each other's jokes. And then you look at the ones that are probably married for a long time. They don't even look at each other. No interact, no laughing. Just let's finish our steak and get out of here. So now they're kind of past that, right? They're past that stage. And now it seems like her guard's kind of down. And she is expressing her feelings. And she's saying that I just want to be next to you. I've found a place next to you I really enjoy. You're very enjoyable. And if you're a single person that is interested in being married someday, it's very important that you find somebody that you think is enjoyable. That's crucial. And you know what happens is, if you put the physical part in before marriage, that becomes the focus. And that becomes the focus of the whole relationship. And I can't even tell you countless number of people that I've talked to, counseled, that I know, that they get married and they don't really even like the person. Well, why'd you get married? I don't know. But they don't really, you gotta really like the person. They have to be really your best friend type. And a lot of guys that are younger, like especially when you're a teenager, like you want a girl that's basically all your like all your guy friends, but that's a girl. That's what you usually want. It's like you that's the way you think. Like, you know, you can pal around with them in the same way, you know, punch them and wrestle them, and you think they're going to like sports like you necessarily. A lot of girls say they like sports, but not a lot that really do. But your vision, that's your vision when you're a young guy. And not, I'm going to get a little graphic, but you basically want one of your guy friends that you could buddy around with that you could have sex with too. That's usually how you think when you're younger. So girls, be very careful. Hey, I'm not lying. I'm being honest here. So girls, be very careful. Right? So we have some interesting things here. Some good advice for a female who wants to get married. Is this guy, is he treating you like this? Does he seem really into you? And is he willing to make some sacrifices to show that? And when you take the physical part off the table, that's when you really find out a lot. If it's on the table, it confuses it gets really messy. You take the physical thing out. You save it for marriage where it's supposed to be in the fireplace. And what happens? You're building connections emotionally, emotionally, spiritually, and socially. That's what you're doing before you get married. So you're building things into a marriage that will last the marriage before you get married. And then the physical part is just that final connector and that final thing. But it's just one thing amongst all the other things. It's not the thing. So as we see this develop, notice in verse 4, now this is the lady talking specifically to the daughters of Jerusalem. And she says this. It's like she gathered her girls around. She goes, let me tell you this. He brought me into the banqueting house. And you know what? His banner over me was love. So you see what's happening there? His fruit, his tree, was so enjoyable, and now she wants to share it. She's excited. And she wants to tell everybody. And part of this is, when you go about romantic love biblically, now it's becoming an example, right? Now it's becoming, like, the daughters of Jerusalem are so into it. But it's like they're learning how it can be. They're hearing how it can be. They're seeing, and maybe like some women, single women, they think, there's no guys like this. Guys don't do this anymore. And guys say that too. There's no girls like that. There's, God, you, if you have the faith to be born again, don't you think you have the faith that God will bring you the right person in your life? You got to apply your faith to the issue of romantic love too. You can't all of a sudden, well, yeah, I put my faith in Jesus and he took all my sins away. But the whole dating relationship and finding, then I got to take care of that all myself. No, you don't. Just have faith. Have faith. Trust in the Lord. So it's interesting because she's the way she describes Solomon's way that he involves himself with her, the way he does that, she's basically saying she's kind of taking, the banner as kind of a military term, and she's saying that Solomon, he conquered and he possessed me. She's basically saying that Solomon, in a way that an army general would take land, she's describing the way that he basically swept her off her feet, the way that he got her affections, and the way he did that was by love. The banner over, like, so she's parading love, genuine love, that he went and he took her by love. And isn't it interesting that that's how Christ conquers our heart? That's how Christ possessed us and conquered us. And what does that do to us when we're secure in God's love? It changes everything. And I really believe that the reason people fall into sin, get into all sorts of terrible, weird things, and even get into addiction is because they're really looking for love. They're looking for their hearts to be tamed, because God made our hearts that way. Did you know that? And he made our hearts in such a way where only he can truly satisfy us. But if we're not satisfied with the love of Christ, you know what happens? Our hearts will be restless to find something. And I believe that's why people get into bad relationships. That's why people stay in bad relationships, even abusive relationships. It's because you just want love and connection so bad. But only Jesus can provide that. And here we're seeing an earthly way that it happens, but it has to come first in our relationship with Christ. And then our relationship with Christ gets worked out in a special way in a marriage. But it has to be first our relationship with Christ. But notice she's noticing that. She's getting overwhelmed by his love. And she's talking about it. But notice this. She says, sustain me with raisin cakes, which actually sounds terrible to me. But I guess back in the day, that sounded pretty good. But has anybody ever had a raisin cake? That doesn't sound very good. It reminds me of a fruit cake or something. So I'm not a big fan of those either. Does anybody like fruitcake? You do? If it's real good, they have good fruitcake? Okay. Okay. I'm unbiblical. Pray for me. What about, I'm getting off track, but what about rhubarb? Does anybody like that? What is that? Never could get into, that's weird. Okay, anyway. So anyway, look why she says this. You guys easily get off track, don't you? She easily says this. She wants to be sustained and refreshed. Why? For I am lovesick. She's weak in the knees. It's all over. She's loved. So she is so loved. And remember, nothing physical is going on here. But she feels so emotionally loved and cared for and special to this man that she describes it as being lovesick. It's too much love for her. She's basically saying, give me some raisin cake, some rhubarb, some fruitcake. Give me something because I can barely even handle this. This is just wiping me out. But here's the interesting thing. Watch what she says next. His left hand is under my head, and his right hand embraces me. That's referring to a specific sexual position, which is interesting. She's lovesick, and then she's describing that. And then she's like, oh, whoa, 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 whoa. Okay, ladies, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem, by the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases. So she's like, whew. She's like, whew. I'm lovesick. And she starts talking, hey, he embraces me and he's this. And she, whoa, whoa, whoa. Just settle down. Don't awaken love before it's time. Settle down. But that's that, and we see that in this book a few times, that same phraseology. And again, what it refers to is how careful we need to be as we progress, that the physical part of it does not begin to play into it. Don't awaken love. What she's saying is don't allow your feelings to take on physical components when you can't fulfill all of those physical components. Wait till you're married, is what she's saying. But she's basically describing the struggle. She's saying the struggle's real, ladies. She's saying this is a very difficult thing, but be very careful you don't cross that line because it's not time. Very important, it's not time. So, now, the guy, verse 8, the Shulamite. Sorry, that's the girl. Verse 8, yeah, I was confusing myself. I guess I got a little off track on the lovesick thing. Okay, so this is the girl again. So check this out. She says, the voice of my beloved, behold, he comes, leaping on the mountains and skipping on the hills. So what she's describing, she's talking to the daughters of Jerusalem. She's saying, okay, we need to hold off on this part. It's getting a little carried away. But now she's thinking about him coming to visit her. Remember, they're not married. So they have different dwelling places. Living together before your marriage is not acceptable. I know that whole thing is changing these days. It doesn't matter. The truth doesn't change. Just remember that, because the culture changes. That's not the best design. If you want to live together and, like people say, take each other for a test drive before you get married, that's not a good idea. It's completely undermining the whole marital plan that God has. But see, there, this separation is good because it's building anticipation and it's giving time of separation when they're not living together. It's giving them time. It's giving the whole thing time to develop, right? But don't you think that's kind of interesting? I thought that was interesting that he was leaping and skipping. I was thinking Sound of Music or just, you know, the hills are alive. I was like, leaping and skipping just doesn't sound like, but I do think there's something in that, that it doesn't say he was, you know, swinging in like an ape on a vine. You know, he wasn't coming in like a lion, but he was coming with poise and control and grace. I think this, when I hear that leaping and skipping, it speaks of his enthusiasm and his excitement, but also that he was doing it in a certain way, that he was cautious, but he was also going to take what the Lord had given him, but he was going to be very delicate and appropriate in his enthusiasm, that he just wasn't going to be animalistic. So he, in a way, he's still kind of working on getting her to be impressed with him. So, you know, she's probably seen him dancing on the hills, like, wow, look at him skip, wow. Look at him leap in the air, that's really impressive. But you know what's interesting, isn't, you see the, like the movies from the 40s or the 50s, a big difference between the love movies or romantic movies now. You know, back in the guys were always, you know, dressed in ties, you know, even at home, you know, they're always a debonair. It seemed like, you know, they're a lot smoother. And now you have this whole other thing, the way guys are to women. And it's, to me, it seems a lot rougher. It seems a lot more aggressive, and it seems a lot rougher, a lot cruder. You know, it wasn't that long ago where, like, it was a big thing to say a bad word in front of a woman, right? Now, a lot of women speak worse than sailors used to speak. But it used to be a whole thing, like, if someone cussed around a woman, like, somebody might beat that guy up. Like, don't talk like that around. Don't say that around. So there is more of a protection and more of a concern about a woman's welfare, more of a, like, a respect for woman, an honoring of woman. And now it seems like that's gone. And so if you're a woman, demand that, because you're valuable. And because you're valuable, you deserve to be treated like a daughter of God. So don't let some guy come in and not open your door, not treat you like a queen, make you pay for everything. Don't do that, okay? If the guy really is into you, he's going to treat you like a queen. He's going to treat you like that. And the respect will grow between the two. And that has to be in place. It's very important. And guys, when you respect a woman, it's amazing how she will respect you back for respecting her and treating her like that. So he's anxious, verse 9. She says, "My beloved is like a gazelle or a stag. Behold, he stands behind our wall, and he's looking through the windows, gazing through the lattice." So we pointed out last week, don't go staring in people's windows. Okay, context, okay, that's not good these days. But the idea behind this is he's anxious, he's looking for her. He can't wait to get there, he can't wait to see her. And she knows that. She feels that enthusiasm. And it's not forced or not something you have to make happen. It's just, man, I can't wait to get there and spend time with her. And she's feeling the same way. So in verse 10, watch what happens. My beloved spoke and said to me, rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. For lo, the winter is past, the rain is over and gone, the flowers appear on the earth, the time of singing has come, and the voice of the turtle dove is heard in our land. The fig tree puts forth her green figs, and the vines with the tender grapes give a good smell. Rise up, my love, my fair one, and come away. So what's happening now is the relationship is progressing. So it's a new season. And relationships, romantic relationships, will have seasons. And the season now is progressing. So that's what you normally should and will see in a relationship before marriage, is you should see progression. And so that's where kind of things can get a little dicey. There's a lot of factors in the speed of progression. And so both people in the relationship should feel comfortable with the progression. But you can definitely be too slow on the progression, or you could be too fast in the progression. And a lot of times that's where the whole relationship thing, after vulnerability, after being lovesick, after having romantic thoughts, and now it starts to get a little more complicated. Or you might want to look at it like you're getting into deeper waters, right? Before, you're in shallow waters, is a little safer. You know, you go to your knees and it's like, okay, this is all right. And then like maybe take it up to like maybe my waist, and oh, it's a little cold. Oh, I'm stepping on some weird stuff, but something hit my leg, but I'm okay. But, you know, it's progressing. And then next thing you know, you're out there. And that's scary. This is a scary part right here. So this is when two people really need to seek the Lord. And you're noticing the guy, like now he's really on board here. He really wants to go in those deeper waters. He's like, spring is here, new season, come out. He's really excited. And she's maybe not feeling that much. We'll see in a sec. But the key here then, this is the key. See, and I think relationships progress like this because God wants us to seek him at every phase. And these are, there's different phases are like checkpoints. And you have to ask yourself, is your hesitation at the checkpoint, is it your own fear? Or is it the Lord? Is it something maybe because of a bad experience before or a bad model of relationship that you've seen or your friends complaining about their spouses? Whatever, you have to, at these checkpoints, at these new seasons, they're entering a new season, so you have to ask the Lord, okay, Lord, is this you? Can I take another step of faith? Can I move forward with this? Because the deeper you get, the harder it is to get back to shore, right? And I think that's why God knows exactly how to progress. Remember, if the physical thing's in place right here, it messes the whole thing up. You're not doing this. And your understanding of who the other person is changed. It changes the whole thing. So now you don't even know. And I believe that sabotages a lot of relationships. Be that as it may. So watch this. This is interesting. As they're progressing, the guy says, "Oh, my dove, in the clefts of the rock, in the secret places of the cliff, let me see your face, let me hear your voice, for your voice is sweet and your face is lovely." You know what he's doing? He's springtime's here, and he's telling her, "Come on out, come a little further. I want to know you more." So the way that she's been interacting has caused him to want more of her. Now, remember, she hasn't put all her cards on the table right in the beginning. And sometimes a woman, but it could be both ways, but just in the context, a woman can put all of her cards on the table on the first date. And if you want to scare a guy off, best way to do it is that. Has to be a progression, right? And that doesn't mean you're not honest and sincere and all that. But just a tip for the ladies. A guy does not want to hear every feeling and emotion that you've ever had in your life in the first couple weeks. Spread it out a little bit. Okay, just like spread it out a little bit. But whatever... Whatever, how she's been playing it, and she's been demonstrative with her feelings, right? She's expressed her feelings, but it seems to be more responsive to him, right? That's important. So now he's wanting her to come out. He wants to know her more. He wants to be closer and intimate. He wants to understand her more. So he's calling her to come out. But watch what happens. Right as he's doing that, her brother, so this is a new group of people, her brothers, they kick in. And they say, "Catch us the foxes, the little foxes that spoil the vines, for our grapes have tender grapes." So now her family's like, this is getting pretty serious. Let's get her to work back in the field. They're getting nervous. Family's getting nervous, uncomfortable. So they're calling her to go back out and work the fields. But what we find in here is something interesting. So we see here that what her brothers were asking her to do was, as the grapes were just starting to emerge, it says they were tender, that now those tender grapes were vulnerable to outside things. He describes them as little foxes. And have you ever seen a fox? They're little, right? Their foxes are small. They're like smaller than I think a lab, I would believe. They're like maybe 30 pounds or something. They're small. But those foxes, you guys are looking around. Am I wrong? I don't know how much they exactly weigh, but if you want to Google it. I don't know. They're small. Do you know? Anybody know? She knows. No, I don't know. But anyway, be that as may. It's not important. They're little. Okay? It says they're little. Okay. Google it later. But here's the thing. Check this out. There's an emphasis on the little fox because a little thing at this point. So this is, the relationship is tender at this point, right? And so it's growing, it's developing. But it's vulnerable, and it's scary. It's a scary phase. And so what this is saying is, what's important, when you're starting to get into deeper waters, it's so important to be able to deal with, talk about, and learn something really critical. Here it is, conflict management. When you're in marriage, you have to know how to deal with conflict appropriately. And you may say, my marriage is never going to have conflict when I get married. We're never going to be upset at each other. We're never going to get mad at each other. And I know a lot of you here, your marriages are like that. But At least that's the way I see it. But no, seriously. So there comes a place where it's tender and you're getting into deeper waters. And you have to deal with things. You have to be able to appropriately handle conflict. That's what this is saying. And here's the thing. Don't let things simmer. Don't just watch foxes eat away at the relationship. If it's the Lord and God's giving you the green light, and you start to have issues that you need to deal with, then it's so important that you deal with those issues and that you don't let something fester and simmer, because it'll undermine the relationship, especially at this crucial point. So now the woman says, her brother is saying, go out and deal with the foxes. And so she says, my beloved is mine, and I am his. He feeds his flock among the lilies. You know what she's doing? She's expressing her confidence in the relationship, even though at this point in the relationship, they may not physically be, not sexually, but just they may not be able to be with each other all the time like she wants. So she's expressing confidence, like, okay, I may have to go take care of the foxes, and he's going to have to take care of his stuff, but she's saying, he's mine now. And she's saying that I'm confident in that. So their relationship, and he's calling her out. Remember that? He's calling her out. Their relationship has progressed to where now she's feeling confident in the relationship and not just the fact that he has to be physically present with her. So then it goes on to say, the guy says, or I'm sorry, the girl. I'm sorry. The girl, she says this. Until the day breaks and the shadows flee away, turn, my beloved, and be like a gazelle or a young stag upon the mountains of Bether. You know what she's saying now? This is interesting. As the connection has become so strong, so it seems like they're able to go out in the deep waters, and it seems like they're comfortable out in the deep waters. And even though there may be some sharks circling around, as long as they're confident in the relationships, the sharks can't spread them apart or devour their relationship. So that's really important. So at this point now, there's a confidence there. The confidence has been built over time, right? And the confidence that's been built over time, now it's taking root. But what we're seeing here, she's expressing sexual desire, because she says, until the day breaks and the shadows flee away. So until it gets light, turn, my beloved, go. You need to go. And be like a gazelle and a young stag amongst the mountains of Bether. She's basically saying this relationship building is so powerful and strong. We shouldn't be together at a time where it could be too tempting or dangerous. So go until it gets light again, basically what she's saying. All right, so chapter 3. Chapter 3 is a quick one. You guys doing okay? Whew, okay. So now this progresses, and the woman is seemingly missing her guy and having anxiety now. Remember, I just said she had confidence in the relationship, but time apart, then it has a tendency to create anxiety. So she's having this dream. So she says, by night on my bed, I sought the one I love, and I sought him, but I did not find him. And I will rise now, I said, and go about the city. In the streets and in the squares, I will seek the one I love. I sought him, but I did not find him. So in this time where he kind of went home and did his thing, and she's doing her, now she just sometimes that happens. Sometimes you can have these bouts where you start to struggle a little bit. And these are all this normal things that happen in romantic relationships as they develop. And so it's almost like she's panicking. She's having some anxiety in her dreams, like she's frantically searching for him and she can't find him. In verse 3, it says, "The watchmen go about the city and they found me. And I said, 'Have you seen the one I love?' And scarcely had I passed them by when I found the one I love and I held him and I would not let him go." So she's having this bout where being separated physically, like she was trusting in the physical proximity that he was to her. And when he was gone, she missed that. And then it started to make her feel a little insecure. And so she's in her dream, she's grabbing him and holding him. She wouldn't let him go and said, "Until I had brought him to the house of my mother and into the chamber of her who conceived me, I charge you, O daughters of Jerusalem." Now she's telling this story to these daughters of Jerusalem. She says, "By the gazelles or by the does of the field, do not stir up or awaken love until it pleases." So there it is again. So she's going through these feelings again. These are sexual longings, sexual desires. And as she's thinking, she wants him. She wants to be close physically to him. But do you ever wonder why God sets it up like this? It's interesting. God sets it up like this. What I believe is what he's building in her is for her to have a trust in the Lord and find her security there, be able to rest there. And so as we go about relationships and we do it the way that the Lord leads us, then we may find ourselves in these particular patterns and things like that. But just remember, the key is to continually seek the Lord and continually understand and know his will and just trust that he is bringing things about properly and building into each person the things that they will need before they get into marriage. He's building that in. So we're just going to finish with this last part. And this is a very interesting part. So now this is the woman speaking again. And she's remembering her wedding day. So now she's just thinking about her wedding day and she's explaining that day, the wedding day. So she says this. She says, "Who is coming out of the wilderness like pillars of smoke, perfumed with myrrh and frankincense, with all the merchants' fragrant powders?" So it's like, when I was reading that, I'm like, that sounds like a football team running out of the tunnel before a game. The smoke and the crowd and the band. But in a way, that's what it's like. That this is a procession. This is like a parade. Because here it's very important to kind of understand a Jewish wedding, because this is what's going on here. So in a Jewish wedding, it would start off with the groom would leave his father's house and he would go to the bride's house and he would ask her to be betrothed. If she said yes, he would have to pay a price for her to her father. And then they would take communion. And then he would go away. So they would be betrothed. So they would be separated to each other at this point. But he would go back to his father's house and she would stay at his mother's house. What would she be doing while she's at her mother's house? She would be preparing herself for him to come. She wouldn't know when he was going to come. So she would be getting ready. She would be getting the dress ready. She would be just thinking about it. She would be praying about it. She would be discussing the things with her family. So she'd be preparing. As she prepared the guy back at his father's house. The invitations would be going out. And when the father said it was time, he would go and get her with a procession of people. And then they would have their wedding. He would come and get her. They would have the wedding. And then they would go off for 7 days in the bridal chambers, if you will, or whatever. For 7 days, they would consummate the marriage, the final physical act of connection for 7 days. And then they would join the rest of the group. You may have noticed that is a complete picture of how Christ came for us, how he paid the price for us, how he went away and promises to come back at a time that we don't know. And when he comes back, there will be a 7-year period where we'll be with Christ while the tribulation goes on the earth, and then we'll come back down to earth. It's a perfect picture. Be that as it may, as we finish this. So now they're coming together. So here's the thing. If it's the Lord, this is what, if we're getting into these type of things, we can just know the time is coming. So the time is here. So we can just rest and trust the Lord to bring the right things to pass. But notice a couple things before we leave. Wow, okay. So they're coming. Verse 7, behold, it was Solomon's couch with 60 valiant men around it. The valiant men of Israel, they all hold swords, being an expert in war. Every man has his sword on his thigh because of fear in the night. So as they're coming with this big procession, they're ready just to protect this marriage. I think that's a great picture of how God protects a marriage. And what does the sword mean in the Bible? The sword is a picture of the Word of God. The sword protects a marriage. A family that is in the Word together stays together. You ever heard that one before? I just made it up right now. It's true, though. So verse 9. Of the wood of Lebanon, Solomon the king made himself a palanquin, which was a bed with a canopy. He made his pillars of silver, its support of gold, its seat of purple, its interior paved with love by the daughters of Jerusalem. So the daughters of Jerusalem like made a tapestry for it. And then he says, go forth, O daughters of Zion, and see King Solomon with the crown with which his mother crowned him on the day of his wedding, the day of his gladness of his heart. So this final thing that we see is this procession with the wedding bed and the protection. And we see the joy of the Lord within, built into the wedding. You remember, the Pharisees asked Jesus why his disciples didn't fast when Jesus was with him. And Jesus' answer was, when you have the bridegroom with you, you don't fast. What he was saying is, during a wedding, all legal, religious obligations were off the table because it was a time you're just supposed to come and celebrate. And if that's not a picture of our relationship with Christ, that he has given his life for us and he's given us a relationship with him to enjoy forever and ever, that we should rejoice in our salvation. So I'm a little bit over. I apologize for that. You guys did a great job. If we could bring you guys up, we'll sing one last song, and then we'll be on our way. God bless you guys. And as they're coming up, let's pray. So Lord, we thank you for this time together. I pray that this message would hit every person. Lord, your word, whether single, married, whether young, old, whether interested in getting married, not interested in getting married, whatever it is, Lord, there's something for all of us in here. And I just pray that you'd write these things on our hearts and our minds. And we thank you ultimately for your love for us, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen. All right, let's stand.